Welcome, Gabe. Our topic tonight is going to be to try to go through some of the themes that Rav Yitzchak Kuttner develops in his Sefer Pachad Yitzchak, and try to draw from there a certain perspective in Machshava on the holiday of Purim. We're going to see that there's going to be an overarching theme that kind of weaves its way, it permeates throughout the different discussions that we're going to center on tonight. So let's begin as follows. Rav Hutner, in Indian Chaf Hei, discusses a very interesting piece. Where he notes the pasuk v'na'afochu asher yishlatu ha'yehudim hema b'sonehem. Of course, the words v'na'afochu have become kind of the call of Purim, the label of Purim. We sing v'na'afochu, we think of the day as a day of v'na'afochu. And Rav Hutner notes that, of course, it's not just the fact that we were downtrodden. And then, asher yishlatu ha'yehudim hema b'sonehem, that the Jews eventually gained control, gained authority over their enemies. But that the yesod of v'nahafochu, of turning things on its head, really lies at the as the centerpiece of the day of Purim. And Rav Hutner questions, what really is the underlying meaning of v'nahafochu? So he gives the following mashal. So you have a person who throws an object, and because of his throw, so he kind of inserts his force into the object, such that the object travels through the air, and the object will travel until the force within it no longer extant. But if we see that that object eventually boomerangs, if it turns backwards, so then we're able to conclude something about it. We can conclude from there that we know that a person threw the object and that the object would have still continued forward in its path, but that it must have collided with something that made it impossible for it to continue. The reason why we see it heading in the opposite direction of the direction in which it was thrown was because it hit something that blocked its continued path, that made it impossible for it to go forward. Rav Hutner says that the idea of v'nahafochu is the exact same idea. V'nahafochu is the boomerang. And, you know, the backwards direction, the hipuch. And it illustrates the concept of impossibility. We know that Haman HaRasha was gozer the decree of Lahashmid Laharogu La'abid in Paragimel of the Megillah, where he decreed that everyone in the Jewish nation would perish, would be put to death. And the idea of V'nahafochu is to establish and reflect that that gzeira, Lahashmid Laharogu La'abid, what seems like the possibility that Klal Yisrael could be brought to an end, could be extinguished, what seems like that possibility is actually an impossibility. V'nahafochu, that gzeira, hits up against a wall that does not allow it to continue, and therefore heads back in the opposite direction, it boomerangs, such that it's no longer that gzeira that it seemed to be, but rather, Klal Yisrael has sovereignty over its enemies. So the idea is that the Nes of Purim, when we were supposed to be put to death, but instead we won the war, and we gained control over Haman HaRasha, that reflects the idea of the permanence, of the everlastingness, of the eternality of the Jewish people. And that's the yesod of v'nahafochu. What Rav Hutner calls Netzach Yisrael, the fact that Klal Yisrael is going to last forever. That lies at the foundation of the Nis of Purim. And as such, it makes the day of Purim one that really focuses very much on the idea of eternality. The idea that the here and now is not all that we experience, but rather that we're guaranteed as the Am Hashem, as an Am Segula, as Netzach Yisrael, that we're going to exist forever into the future. That's at the center of this day of Purim. And I'd like to try to demonstrate how this theme of Nitzchius, of everlastingness, can really be seen in a number of different elements of the day of Purim. And each one of them is one that Rav Huttner develops beautifully and eloquently in different ways. So let's begin with perhaps the central element of the day, the first of the mitzvos hayom, the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. The mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. So now we're jumping to Rav Huttner in Inyan Hay, where Rav Huttner asks the following questions. He notes that according to the Rambam, and this was on your Mikoro sheet if you had a chance to take a look at it, the Rambam quotes a Yerushalmi in Maseches Megillah, and the Rambam writes as follows. Kol Sifrei HaNeviim V'chol HaKsuvim Asidin Libatel Imos HaMashiach. All of the Sepharim of Nach are going to be Batel in the future in Yemos HaMashiach. Chutz Memegillas Esther. Esther is the one exception. Harehi Kayemes Kachamish Achum Shei Torah. It's going to exist and be maintained. It's going to persist just like the Chamisha Chum Shei Torah. And Rav Huttner notes this Rambam, really quoting it from a Yerushalmi, and he wants to know, what is so special? What is unique? What is singular about Megillas Esther, such that it's not going to be batel in Yemos HaMashiach like the rest of the Svarim of Neviim and Ksuvim? What distinguishes Megillas Esther from the rest of the Megillos, from the rest of Nach? Question number one. And in his patented fashion, Rav Huttner kind of takes us on a journey where we now confront a question that comes out of nowhere, one that seems to be totally unrelated to our first question. But as we will see, the two points are very, very much connected. The next question transitions to the relationship between Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov and Esav, at the beginning of Parshas Toldos, have an interaction together where Yaakov wants to purchase the Bechorah, purchase the rights to the firstborn from Esav. And Yaakov says, Mechra chayom es bechorah sechali. Sell to me today, like the day today, chayom, your bechorah to me. Chazal explained, why did Yaakov have to say Mechra chayom, like today, as the day today? Why not just say Mechra bechorah sechali? Why Mechra chayom? So Chazal explained that when Yaakov and Esav meet up again in Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov he goes away from Esav, and he says, Adavo el Adoni Seira, that I'll return to you in Seir. And Chazal, Rashi quotes from the Medrash, that Yaakov Avinu doesn't actually ever reach Seir, he doesn't actually reunite with Esav. And because, of course, we cannot assume that Yaakov was saying something vacuous, was saying something untruthful, we should interpret that Ad Avo al Adoni Seira is a reference to Acharis Hayamin, is a reference to Yemos HaMashiach. The days in which V'alu Moshiim Bahar Tzion L'shpot Es Harisav V'hayisal HaShem HaMelucha. The Yemos HaMashiach in which Yaakov will confront Esav once again and defeat the Malchus of Esav and thereby regain Malchus Yisrael. Ad Avo al Adoni Seira is a reference to Achres Hayami. And this, Rav Huttner explains, is why Yaakov had to emphasize Kayom. Because you see, Yaakov was concerned that Esav could say to him, you know, Yaakov, just as you're going to tell me that something you're telling me now is really a reference to the future, is really a reference to Achres Hayamim, so too something that I'll tell you now is a reference to Achres Hayamim. So when you tell me, when you say, sell me the Bechorah, and I say yes, well, just as you meant in the future, I also mean in the future. So therefore comes Yaakov and says, Mechra Chayom es Bechoras Chavi. Sell it to me today. Now. Like the daylight that we see right now. None of this reliance on Achres Hayamim. There shouldn't be any ambiguity. Rather, there should be complete and utter clarity that the Mechiras HaBechor is right here, right now. And Rav Huttner takes this a step further. And he notes that the way that a person speaks often reflects his essence. It reflects a fundamental part of his personality, of his thinking, of his persona. And when Yaakov says Ad Avo al Adoni Seira and refers to Achres Hayamim, that reflects that Yaakov Avinu is a person of Achres Hayamim, a person who lives not just for the here and now, but also for the future, also for what's to be, also for what's to come. He seeks to grow. He plans towards the future. It's not just about the instant and immediate gratification that's possible on the spot. And in stark contrast, Esav is the person of Kayom. Esav is rooted in Olam Hazeh. That's why Esav needs to hear Mechra Chayom es Bechoras Chali. Vayiv es Esav es HaBechorah. Esav disgraced the Bechorah because he wasn't interested in accepting the responsibility of that he would incur going forward. Rather, he thought only in the here and the now. And that's what distinguishes Yaakov and Esav from one another. Yaakov being a person of Achres Hayamim, while Esav being a person solely of Olam Hazeh. Futner then takes this idea a step further. And he notes a really just a fabulous Hara. In Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim, the Psukim associate the word Machar, tomorrow, the word Machar, with Amalek. In Parshas Beshalach, when Klal Yisrael fights Amalek, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Yoshua, Vayomer Moshe Yoshua becharlanu anoshim, Vitzehi lochem ba'amalek machar. Anochi nitzav al in hagivah, al rosh hagivah, umateho elokim biyadi. Machar. Anochi nitzav. Tamar. So too, Rav Huttner notes, with respect to Shmuel and David, it says, L'macharas. And of course we know, in Megillas Esther, what does Esther say? Machar. Machar is always associated with the fight against Amalek. And the question is why? The truth is, that's the Maharal's comment that Rav Huttner cites from the Maharal. Rav Huttner was very much influenced by the thought of the Maharal. And the idea is that Amalek is a nation of Olam Hazeh. See, Amalek was a descendant of Esau. It's a big theme in Rav Huttner's writings, and it goes all the way back to Psukim in the Torah and to Mefarshim like the Ramban, who note that Amalek was part of the genealogy, was a descendant of Esau. And therefore, Amalek carries with it some of the qualities, the paradigmatic qualities that we see in Esau. And just as we developed that Esau is the personality of Kayom, of today, while Yaakov Avinu is the personality of Achres Hayomim, of looking towards the future, so too, Amalek, the descendant of Esau, is the nation of Olam Hazeh. It's the nation that conceals the existence of Achres Hayomim, that doesn't allow us to think into the future. And therefore, whenever we fight Amalek, we say Machar, Limachar. Because with Amalek, we're trying to transcend what Amalek stands for. We're trying to transcend just the here and the now, the Olam Hazeh, and we're reaching for that time in the future, for that Machar, for the Acheres Hayom. So, Chevra, why is it that Megillas Esther is the one Megillah, the one Sefer in Nach, according to the Yerushalmi and the Rambam, that's not Batel in the future? Because the whole Yesod of Megillas Esther was the defeat of Amalek, was the defeat of Haman Harasha. And when we defeat Haman Harasha, what we do is we defeat the notion that all there is Olam Hazeh, that all there is the here and the now. We announce, we proclaim, we highlight the fact that it's not just Olam Hazeh that we live for, but that there's going to be a Yemos HaMashiach. There's going to be an Acheres Hayamim. There's another time for which to yearn. There's another time towards which to aspire. And if Megillas Esther is the nes that reflects that notion, that concept, then of course Megillas Esther has to be the one that remains relevant in Yemos HaMashiach. Because it's the Megillah that teaches us the idea of Yaakov Avinu, of being a person of Acheres Hayamim. The nes of Purim is a nes that lasts even into Acheres Hayamim. Just like that with which we began. That Klal Yisrael is a nation of Netzach Yisrael, is a nation that's going to exist forever. And that the nes of Purim, V'nahafochu, reflects the idea of permanence and everlastingness and eternality. So too, Mikra Megillah, the Sefer from which we read the nes of Purim, is also going to exist, and only it will exist in Yemos HaMashiach, because it's the one that establishes, it's the one that accentuates the idea of Yemos HaMashiach, Acheres Hayamim, living not just in the now, but also for a greater future. We see this idea as well with regard to another mitzvah of the mitzvos hayom. I'm going to try to show how Rav Huttner weaves this idea through many of the mitzvos hayom. And that's in the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos. Huttner has a beautiful idea. And this is in Yud Beis in Parachat Yitzchak. Huttner asks a very simple, or implies a very simple question. Why is it that Purim is the only holiday that's mechayev the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos? We don't have a mitzvah of Mishloach Manos on any other yontif in the year. It's only the holiday of Purim. Yemei Mishta v'Simcha of Purim that are mechayev the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos. And the question is why. So here too, Rav Huttner expands and develops, he deepens his yesod of going back to Esav, understanding that Amalek doesn't exist in a vacuum, that Haman HaRasha, it doesn't exist in a vacuum, but rather carries with him many of the paradigmatic qualities of Esav. And Rav Huttner explains as follows. The last of the Galios. We know that there are Dalet Malchios, four stages of Galus that Klal Yisrael is put through. And the last one is called Galus Romi, the Galus of Rome. But the truth is that sometimes it's called Galus Edom. Why are those two interchanged, Galus Romi and Galus Edom? So the reason why the final Galus is known as Galus Edom is because it's the Galus in which the authority of Edom is given to all other nations. The final Galus is not perpetrated by one nation only, it's perpetrated by many nations. But the authority of that Galus, the authority of that persecution of Klal Yisrael, stems from Edom and is then given to others. Now, of course, Edom is Esav. Esav is the forefather of Edom. And when's the first time that Edom gave over its authority to another nation to rule upon us? Points out Rav Huttner, the story of Purim, Malchus Paras. When Haman gives over the authority of Edom to Achashverosh to rule sovereign over Klal Yisrael, to persecute Klal Yisrael. That's the historical background. Now, Rav Huttner notes another very interesting phenomenon. How does Klal Yisrael interact with Edom, with this Malchus that's in charge of the last of Galios? So we know from Parshas Vayishlach, when Yaakov Avinu is preparing himself to interact with Esav, that he prepares himself in three ways. And one of which was Shiluach Matanos. That Yaakov Avinu brought with him, he was a gift-bearing brother. He brought with him many gifts as a point of sycophancy, to be a sycophant, to kind of kiss up to Esav, to earn the favor of his brother Esav. And Chazal learned from there that whenever we interact with Malchus Romi, with Edom, we should do the same. We should give gifts. Now, the Yesod is as follows. When a person gives gifts as a way of earning favor in the eye of their recipient, so his gift lacks any sense of genuineness. It's not coming from a real place of desire, from a real place of affection, of wanting to illustrate his love for another person, his kindness towards another person. Rather, it's coming from a selfish pursuit. You want to make sure that the other person will treat you well. And of course, that's a disingenuous gift. And points out Rav Huttner that whenever someone becomes a disingenuous giver, whenever someone becomes the type of person who gives gifts solely for the purpose of earning the favor of the person who receives the gift, so then even his genuine gifts won't seem genuine. If I'm always dishing out a gift to one person to my right and to my left just to make sure that everybody will treat me well, then even when I give a gift to my child and I want him or her to understand the affection that I have for them, they're not going to feel it. Why? Because me as a person, I'm known as a disingenuous giver. My gifts lack the opportunity, they lack the capacity to convey that sense of ahava v'rayus. If this is the case, Chevra, so then we can explain why Purim is the day on which we have the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos. Because Purim is the day that we defeat Edom. Purim is the day that we defeat Amalek. Purim is the day that we defeat Haman HaRasha. Purim is the day that we defeat the concept of Hayom, that we defeat the concept of Michrach Hayom, of Olam Hazeh. Purim is the day that we live for Olam Haba, for Yemos HaMashiach, for Acharis HaYomim, the day in which we put Amalek to rest and everything for which it stands. And if that's the case, then we no longer need to resort to our disingenuous gift-giving. Instead, Purim becomes the day of the defeat of Amalek. Purim becomes the day in which we regain the capacity to give a genuine gift. U'mishloach manos ish l're'ehu. Purim is the day in which we can convey that ava v'reus to everyone around us, in which we're not tied to the disingenuous gift-giving that we do with Shar Umos Ha'olam, that we learn from our interaction with Edom, because Purim is the day in which we defeat Edom. U'mishloach manos ish l're'ehu. We'll carry this forward to one more of the elements of Purim, and then we'll wrap up with a concluding note. Of course, we know one of the most famous elements of Purim, the Gemara Megillah, Daf Zayin. Chayv Adam, Chayv Inish, Levesume Bepuraya, Adelo Yada, Bein Arur Haman, Levarach Mordechai. The idea of Ad Delo Yada. Rav Hutner comments that one of his Talmidim asked, if this is the case that Ad Delo Yada stands at the center of Purim, that we don't know the difference, we cannot distinguish between Haman and Mordechai, so then why does Shoshanas Yaakov become the Iker Zemer of Purim? Because after all, in Shoshanas Yaakov, we'll sing it tomorrow night, Be'ezus Hashem. Shoshanas Yaakov is a Zemer that highlights the difference between Mordechai and Haman. Mordechai HaYehudi. Haman HaRasha. It underscores the difference between the two. So if Purim is the day of Adelo Yada, then why does Shoshanas Yaakov become the Iker Zemer? Rav Hutner ties this to a yesod that he has in many places. And that's as follows. It's the yesod of Havdalah. The yesod of Havdalah is that in order to distinguish fundamentally between X and Y, between two things in front of you, you first need to pick up on, you first need to pinpoint how similar X and Y really are. Only after seeing all of the ways in which two things overlap can you then pick up precisely on the fundamental ways in which they differ. Paradigmatic example of this idea is the Shnei HaSeirim of Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, there were two goats that were offered as korbanos, the Seir LaHashem and the Seir LaAzazel. The Seir LaHashem was brought lifnai v'lifnim. Its blood was brought all the way into the Kodesh HaKodashim, into the innermost chamber of the Beis HaMikdash, into the holiest place on earth. And in contrast, the Seir LaAzazel was not brought into the Beis HaMikdash, but was brought outside of the Beis HaMikdash, was thrown off of the cliff by the Ishiti. The Shnei HaSeirim could not be any more fundamentally different. But the Halacha tells us that they needed to be physically exactly the same. They needed to cost the same. They needed to have the same appearance. They needed to look exactly the same. Because only after realizing all of the ways in which the Seirim overlap can we then pinpoint the fundamental difference between them. Namely, the fact that one is LaHashem and the other is LaAzazel. Rav Hutner explains that the same idea applies to the relationship, the sibling relationship of Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov and Esav, on the surface, have similarity between them. Chazal point out that Esav also tries to ask about the halacha. He tries to be someone who's engaged in halacha, just like Yaakov Avinu. He asks his father Yitzchak the types of things from which he has to take ma'aser. In fact, the Torah tells us, "Vayehav Yitzchak as Esav kitzai befev," that Yitzchak had a great love for Esav, his son. And Rav Hutner says that the reason why Yitzchak had to have that love and that affection for Esav was because Yitzchak had to engage in what he calls the Avodas HaHashva'a. The first step in putting your finger on fundamental difference is first seeing the overlap, first seeing the similarity. So Yitzchak had to have a love and an affection for Esav, so that Yaakov and Esav would be similar, so that he could see all of the similarities between them. And only from that vantage point could Yitzchak give the brachos to Yaakov and Esav, which were, of course, so fundamentally different. A bracha of spirituality to Yaakov and a bracha of physicality to Esav. So if this is the case, then we can understand the Yesod of Ad Lo Yada, which then leads to the Zemer of Shoshanas Yaakov. What's Ad Lo Yada? Ad Lo Yada bein Arar Haman Uvarach Mordechai is the Avoda of Hashva'a. It's engagement in trying to see the overlapping elements of two poles, of two things that seem so different on the surface. But when two things seem so different on the surface, like Haman and Mordechai, like Klal Yisrael and Amalek, you first have to see all of the ways in which they're similar before you can pinpoint how their fundamental differences. So Ad Lo Yada says, engage in Avodas HaHashva'a. First pick up on all of the ways in which Klal Yisrael and Amalek, in which Mordechai and Haman overlap. And afterwards, you'll see how fundamentally different they are. At first we do Ad Lo Yada, and then we can get to a point of Shoshanas Yaakov, where the Iker Zemer of the Yom of Purim highlights the difference between Mordechai HaYehudi and Haman HaRasha. So Chevra, we've seen woven throughout the mitzvos Hayom, whether it be Mikra Megillah, Mishloach Manos, the idea of Ad Lo Yada, throughout the mitzvos and the elements of Purim, how much of the fabric of Purim connects back to our relationship with Amalek, to the rivalry between Klal Yisrael and Amalek, how Purim is the day on which Klal Yisrael defeats Amalek, defeats Edom, defeats Esav, defeats the concept of Michrach Hayom, and instead lives for Acharis Hayomim, such that the Megillah exists even b'Yamos HaMashiach, such that the day of Purim calls upon or accentuates Netzach Yisrael, the idea of an Ahafochu. I'll leave you on the following note. The Megillah at the very end, tomorrow night we'll read it, says, V'zichram lo yasuf mizar'am. That the commemoration of this day will never cease from Klal Yisrael. And there's a striking medrash in the Yalkut Shimoni of Mishlei that says that while the other Yamim Tovim are going to be Batel, La'ased Lavo, Purim, the day of Purim, the Yontif of Purim, is going to exist forever. And of course, the question is why? What makes Purim so different from the other Yamim Tovim? That the other Yamim Tovim be Yamos HaMashiach, we won't have a need for them anymore. But Purim will still be essential. Rav Hunner provides the following mashal. Imagine that you have two people searching for others at night. And in complete darkness, they need to find different modes, different methods to find the people for whom they search. So one of them takes out a candle, takes out a torch, and he relies on the light of the candle, on the light of the torch, to guide him as he searches for the people who are missing. But the other doesn't have a candle at his disposal. And instead, he needs to develop another quality. He needs to develop his listening skills. He needs to develop his ears. He needs to be able to pick up on the voices of those around him because he won't be able to see them. The first one can see those around him with his light, but the second one cannot. He can only rely on his ears. So if we were to compare the preference of both of these modes, what would we say? With respect to clarity, certainly the first is preferred to the second. Certainly it's easier to see someone, to make someone out with the light of a candle than just with the sound of a voice. However, points out Rav Hutner. The second person who develops his ability to hear other people's voices, he's developed for himself an additional skill, an additional quality that wasn't honed by the first. He's developed for himself a skill that's going to last even when the darkness falls away. The next day when the sun rises and the world is lit up and light exists throughout the world and the candle will become obsolete, the second will still be able to use that skill that he developed the night before. Listening to the voices of those around him during the daytime, just as he did at night. The Nimshol Rabosai is that Klal Yisrael recognizes and relates to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in two different ways, two different Anochis. There's the Anochi of Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzei Sicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. There's the Anochi of relating to the Ribono Shel Olam in the clearest of ways. When we see the Yad Hashem right in front of us, where there are no doubts. Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu frees Klal Yisrael from the shackles of Mitzrayim with Kriyas Yamsuf and the Eser Makos. And there could be no doubt. Ani velo malach, ani velo saraf, ani velo ashaliach, ani hu velo acher, says the Haggadah. There could be no doubt that it's the Ribono Shel Olam. Yitzias Mitzrayim, and the Yomim Tovim that are rooted in Yitzias Mitzrayim, each and every one of them. They are the days that reflect that relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that stems from a source of clarity, that's rooted in the candlelight. But then there's another Anochi. There's the Anochi of Anochi Haster Astir Panai Bayomahu. The Anochi of Hester Panim. The Anochi in which Klal Yisrael relates to Hashem, but doesn't see him so clearly. The Anochi in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hidden from sight. In which Klal Yisrael doesn't see the Yad Hashem on a day-to-day basis. The Anochi, where the person traveling at night doesn't have the torch in front of him. He only has his ears to make out the sounds of the voices around him. Chevra, B'Yemos HaMashiach, when we have the ultimate light, when there will be no greater light than that of the or of the Mashiach, Tzidkenu. We won't need the clarity of the Yomim Tovim of Yitzias Mitzrayim. Because we'll have the or of Yemos HaMashiach, and it will be even greater than the or of Yitzias Mitzrayim. But just as that person who searches at night without the candle develops another skill that's relevant even the next day, so too, the relationship of Anochi Haster Astir Panai, the ability to relate to the Ribono Shel Olam and recognize him, even in a state of Hester Panim, that will remain relevant forever. That's a skill, that's a mode, that's a relationship that is everlasting, that's eternal, one that lasts even into Yemos HaMashiach. And therefore Purim, the day of Vizichron Lo Yosef Mizaram, is the one Yontif, says the Medrash, that's not going to be Batel in the future. So Chevra, as we approach the upcoming day of Purim, hopefully we will all be able to tap into that Yesod of the Nitzchios of Klal Yisrael, of the Nitzchios of Purim, live not just for the here and the now, but also think about how our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is forever, how we develop ways to relate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that exists not only in times of clarity, but also in times of confusion, like the year that we've experienced. Also in times where we can't see the Yad Hashem so well, But Anochi Haster Astir Panai, it remains relevant now. It was always relevant, and will remain relevant always into the Yemos HaMashiach, into the days of Nitzchius. V'nahafochu v'zichram lo Yasuf Mizara. Wish everybody a Purim Sameach, a Freilichen Purim, and hopefully we'll continue next week, Be'ezus Hashem, Yisbarach, with the Sugyos in Arvi Pesach.